This is Dusty Wright. Welcome back to the Culture Catch. And this is part two of my interview with musician-actor Kevin Bacon. Enjoy. Let's backtrack for a second, because I want to get back. Jerry the Geeter Blavitt.
The Geeter with the heater, the big boss with the hot sauce.
That's right.
Jerry was a disc jockey from, my brother is 10 years older than me. I'm 47.
It's really your brother's heir, but he's still doing it.
No, he's still on the radio,
he's still
Jerry.
On the radio, right?
Yeah. And I grew up listening to him. He's been on the radio straight through. And he's become a friend. I did a movie called Telling Lies in America, which is one of those kind of like little under-the-radar movies. And I played a disc jockey, and I think it was about 1961 or something like that. Playing that kind of, you know, fast-talking you know, disc jockey, and in those days, there were a lot of jocks that were very instrumental in sort of crossing the racial barriers, because they would play what they called race music, and the white kids were listening to it. And
race people, records, man.
Yeah. People were like really up, you know, some people were really kind of up in arms about it. And a couple of these guys, I mean, Wolfman Jack probably being the most famous one, you didn't know if they were white or black. And as research for that movie, I hung out with Jerry Blavitt.
What?
And went in, and you know, he's still spinning wax, you know, he's got stacks and stacks of these 45s are just lying around, you know, like, you can't believe that they actually play, you know, they're just like stacked up in this little studio he's got, and doing the rap, you know. And while we were there, I mean, like crazy stuff, like Brian Wilson called in, you know, and he put me on the phone with Brian Wilson. And he's great. He's a great guy. He's a real Philadelphia fixture. And
he's a folk hero. You know, I helped produce the documentary Wildwood Days, uh-huh. which has been airing. And we decided early on, because I didn't have the Geeter experience, but I knew that this guy was pretty switched on, to make him an associate producer was the best thing we did for the project.
Sure.
Because he opened up the phone books, and Dick Clark was in the thing before he knew it, Chubby Checker, Bobby Rydell. You know, all the guys that went from Philly to Wildwood to hang out and play and stuff. And we went to the dances. You know, I went to his club, Margate.
Yeah.
And I watched everyone dance to the Geeter.
Yeah.
You know, because I watched Dick Clark growing up and stuff, and that whole phenomena. And I was just amazed. And the guy's energy.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, and you can go down to, I think it's called Memories of Margate.
Memories in Margate.
Memories in Margate to a sock hop with the Geeter. It's an experience you will never forget.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost kind of hard to describe it, because it really is kind of like this time capsule of, you know, of what sock hops were about. And people just have an absolute blast, and he is really, really amazing.
Geeter, there's your props, man. We love you.
We love you, man.
Favorite rock concert of all times?
Favorite? I'd say it was probably the Stones kind of a toss-up, maybe. I think I saw Springsteen, I think it was New Year's Eve in the 70s at the Tower Theater in Philly. And I mean, I could be, you know, if you remember it, you weren't there. It's one of those kinds of things. And the Stones, I've seen the Stones a bunch of times. One of the tours I saw, I think Stevie Wonder might have opened for them.
Yeah, that was in the 70s. Because that rolled into Akron. That was like 72, I'm thinking.
Right.
And maybe even Commander Cody on the bill.
Yeah,
somebody else.
Cody,
but they played at the Akron Rubber Bowl. I remember that tour. Yeah, that was a killer tour.
And there's nothing really quite like, I mean, between the Stones and Springsteen, I think those are the two, really. And then, you know, what's amazing about those, you know, shows is they continue to be great.
Yeah. I mean, the guys are still giving the blood up there, man.
Yeah.
If you could have written one song that you really admire,
wow. If I could have written one song, God, there's so many. In fact, that you know, this last playlist that I did was songs I wish I'd written.
Well, there you go. Throw a couple at us.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. You know what song I love is Something in the Way She Moves by James Taylor.
Beautiful.
And then I also like Something in the Way She Moves by George Harrison. Is that George's song? I can't remember if it's his or if it's a Lennon McCartney song. But those are, you know, two Something in the Way
something
She Moves.
Something was, because there's the big story that Sinatra does the song Something, right? He goes, I want to thank those cuckoo Beatles, McCartney and Lennon, but it was a Harrison song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My friend is a big, I don't know if he said it like that, but my friends, you know, that's how it got passed down to me from my friend who owns the little CD store around the corner, my friend Sal. Yeah, songs, I'll tell you.
To me, you know, it's, you know, the thing about music is that you have to just hear. I always find that I'm interested in hearing the song. You know what I mean? The genre is not as important to me. As an interesting song, if it's, you know, a rap song or a country song or, you know, a big band song or whatever it is, you know, it's to me, it's more about the song than the kind of music.
Yeah, exactly. My friend from Italy, they're journalists, and his wife is writing an article, and she wanted to know. She said, "Do you think music is different on a subatomic level between men and women?" Because, you know, you look at guys at a concert and there's a guitar solo and all the guys are making the guitar solo face and riffing on their hands.
Right.
And the women are sitting there looking bored.
Right.
You know, do you think that men really get into music on a much more physical level than women do? You know,
well,
it's more primal, like we're the Viking.
Well, guitars are just extensions of our penises.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true.
Although then you look at an acoustic guitar and you say, well, it's kind of shaped like a woman and it's got this hole. And, you know, I don't know. I do think that we get into music on a physical level. I mean, I think guys in general, you know, approach the world from a more physical place. You know, not to make any kind of huge generalizations, but I think in general we approach the world from a more physical and a more sexual kind of place, and women approach the world from a more emotional and oftentimes, you know, spiritual kind of place, and so of course our feelings about music is going to be different. Like, I love The Darkness. My wife cannot listen to The Darkness.
That's by Springsteen, The Darkness.
No, the band The Darkness.
Oh, The Darkness.
Yeah,
the
have
band.
You ever heard
of
them?
Oh, yeah. Great glam band.
Yeah, I love
screeching
them.
Vocals like Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic. And, you know, some of their, you know, they just, you know, have hilarious songs. And also, they're great. I mean, it's just a great band. And
So you're cranking it, and Kira's like,
she's
Kevin,
like,
turn that
she's
shit
like,
down, man.
No, I can't. You know, she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to hear that. I mean, another band that just pops into my head, which is, you know, that I relate to on sort of a physical level, is Audioslave. I think Audioslave is an amazing band.
And Chris Cornell can really get there.
Chris Cornell is like the best singer in rock right now, I think. Yeah. He's got the best, just all around great rock and roll voice. And the guitarist, Tom Morello, I mean, the solos are just so interesting to me, and just, he gets such amazing sounds, and when I hear them, I'm like, kind of like, you know, almost slipping into air guitar. You know, I don't go quite that far.
Come on, you do it.
Oh, once in a while, I'll play one or two licks in the air.
You're making the face, the orgasm face, and doing the guitar thing. Yeah, and we even play guitar, and you go, how does Tom do it? I saw him with Rage Against the Machine one tour.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't playing with any effects. And I'm like, what?
Really?
How's he getting sounds like this? Unless they were like hidden under stage or stuff. I'm looking all over. I had a good sight line. I'm going, okay.
No pedals.
What what stomp box is he hitting here?
Mm-hmm.
My friend's like, no, man, it's, you know, it's him. It's his fingers. Uh-huh. You know, he's riding the volume pedal on the guitar. I'm like, if he was, then that's the case. He's even more, I hail him even more.
Yeah, man. He's amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's right. You're dead on. It is. It's a male thing, and it's just like, you know, you pump your fist. You're at the concert, you know, and they're up there doing it, and you're like, you know, all inhibitions, all bets called off, and you're flinging yourself into the stage. You know, it's a clash on stage, and like, yeah, let's go, man.
I took my kids to see U2 when we were out in L.A. It was actually at the Pond in Anaheim, and you know, even a band like U2 now, I mean, the crowd, there are some young people there, but there's also a lot of people who are like my age.
Our age. Yeah.
Our age. Yeah. And in, you know, Dockers and,
Kevin's never in Dockers, man. I've seen him in the city. You're never in Dockers.
Dockers and polo shirts, and they're, you know, raising their fists in the air and you know, high-fiving each other and stuff like that. You know, just guys. I mean, there's no girls doing that. It's right. Just guys. And my son and daughter are there, and they're kind of like looking at me like, oh, my God, Dad, what did you bring us to? What is this?
Do you think critics are tougher on your music or your films? Or because you entered through film?
First off, I don't read reviews. I stopped reading reviews a long time ago. Sometimes they find their way to you. You know what I mean? As much as you try not to, something will open up and someone, your friend will call you up the next morning and say, hey, man, are you okay? And you kind of get the gist of what happened. But I would say, in general, being an actor playing music is, nobody wants to like it. And look, I mean, I've always understood that that's the way it was going to be. And I think that I'm kind of the same way. When I see another actor, you know, that's putting a band together, I'm rolling my eyes too, you know.
Why can't you multitask? I mean, you're an artist.
I don't know.
You're allowed to paint, you know.
I tell you what I think it is. I have theories about it. My theory is that most people in their heart of hearts think that what I do as an actor is not that hard, or what actors do in general. Mm-hmm. Most people think, well, if I had, you know, I was in the school play, and if I look like Tom Cruise, I could, you know, I could be a movie star too. I think that most people think that what Bono does is hard. What Springsteen does is hard. I don't think a lot of people look at them and go, hey, I could do that.
Right.
Because most people have, at some point in their life, you know, picked up an instrument or tried to sing in the shower and had their, you know, wife go, you know, shut up. You know, I think that music, and certainly pop music and rock music, we put those musicians on a huge kind of pedestal. You know what I mean? Our appreciation of them goes beyond the way that we appreciate actors. I think that they really are, you know, amazing icons. And I think that there's a certain hubris about an actor wanting to stand up and sing his songs that people really just kind of reject. And, you know, some people have said to me, well, you know, it must be, you know, so helpful, you know, to be a movie star. It must help a lot with, you know, people responding to your music. And right. I say, well, you know, if we go and play a show, there could maybe be 150 people that are going to come out and just to see what I look like in person and see what I'm wearing and, you know, maybe hang around backstage and hope to get an autograph.
Right.
But in terms of, like, radio and record labels and any kind of really kind of, you know, mass appreciation for the music, I think it's like much harder. You're like 10 steps behind anybody else.
But yet, you know, and here's the difference, you know, when you were saying actors, an actor on Broadway or a stage actor, it kind of levels the playing field because people see stage, they see theater,
right,
and they go, wow, I could never do that. Mm-hmm. Remember all of those lines,
right,
and bring that passion every single night. And you look at the theater actors who may not have the careers in movies, they can do it, you know?
Yeah.
They can cross over and not have, it's really weird. It's maybe, I don't know, that's an interesting theory.
I've just always felt like, look, I knew that was going to be the deal, you know? I just knew that was going to be the deal, and I just say, well, you know, I want to play anyway.
Right,
you know, I want to play. I like to play. And my brother is a phenomenal musician. And
right.
He's a great writer. And, you know, I tell you, the one thing that I've noticed, though, where there is very little resistance, and that is amongst musicians. Musicians, to me, are a very, really kind of open to the idea that I would want to play music.
Right.
You know, I've never walked into a situation, and we've been in a lot of situations with a lot of musicians, you know, benefit situations, studio, you know, we've recorded with different people, you know, played with a bunch of different people. And there is never that, like, oh, please, you're an actor, you know, just trying to sing. I mean, that's because music to me, I mean, it sounds corny, but there is a certain kind of brotherhood in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That does not really exist in the movie business. You know, I don't feel so much like I am in a brotherhood of movie actors. You know, there's a real kind of like every man for himself. It's a very isolating sort of medium. But when you play music, you have to groove. You know, you
right.
have to. It's gotta feel cohesive. And you have to, you know, the bass player has to be listening to the drummer, and the drummer's got to be, you know, hearing where the vocal's going to fall in, and you know what I mean? It's got to all be coming together.
How much music are you doing these days? Are you between projects? Are you getting ready to start another project? You've got the new album coming out.
We've got the new album coming out, so we have probably about... between now and the end of the year, we probably so far have about 10 or 15 shows. Not what I would call like a full-on tour, but we've got, you know, some runs. We're doing some stuff in the end of July up in New England, and we'll probably have a New York date coming, and you know, so we got some stuff going on.
What's your favorite venue now that the Bottom Line's closed?
The last place we played was B.B. King's.
Great.
And I like B.B. King's.
Yeah.
It was good. It was good for us.
They've kind of taken all those bands that were playing there.
Yeah.
It was a drag to see the Bottom Line go out.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible.
You know, and now CB's is being threatened.
I know. It's terrible, man. I find it heartbreaking. I mean, I really do. I mean, I can't believe that CB's is going to go down, but, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, I like B.B. King's. It's the thing that's nice about it for us is that you can hit, hopefully, some tourists too. You know, you don't have to just rely on, you know, just the New York. I mean, New York's a big place, but, you know, it's sometimes there's a lot to do in New York.
You're always competing every night. Yeah.
Every night you're competing. Yeah. There's a lot to do in New York. But if you put your name on a marquee right on 42nd Street, there's a lot of people that are walking around now down there that might just, you know, kind of stop in.
There's a really cool little club. I'm going to hip you to if you don't know it. The Rockwood Music Hall. It's owned by Ken Rockwood from the band Professor and Marianne, Bar None. And it's a complete musician's hang. You know, it's very small. It's too small for the Bacon Brothers, but it's a good place to hang to see other great music.
Wow.
People who have maybe slipped through the cracks
with
their indie labels. It's on Allen, just south of Houston, which is First Avenue.
Okay.
It's right up from where the old living room used to be.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, man, it is one of the nicest rooms I've been in a long time in New York, because you can feel Ken's love.
Mm-hmm.
He's there every night.
Mm-hmm.
He's up in his little cubbyhole running the soundboard and the lights. He's got an incredible back line with a baby grand piano, you know, all A-class equipment, a really great wine bar. And it's like, you know, it's for people in our demographic who want to go hear great music and really listen to music.
So do you go down to see somebody specifically, or you just go down?
Yeah, I just go down and hang out sometimes. Our band plays down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as you get older and you're trying to do this as an indie artist, it becomes very daunting, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you just, like, sometimes you go, like, why am I even doing this? Because you talk about competing with all the stuff.
Right.
And if you don't have a name and you're just doing it for the love of the music, you want to find places where you can play that are comfortable and you can just share your music.
Yeah. My son is in a couple of bands now.
Uh-oh.
And
here we go.
Yeah, he plays bass in one band called Running the Guard, and he plays guitar and writes in another band called Terra Level Red. And he's into a really, really hardcore scene. Musically, I have to say, you know, my joke is that if your parents like it, it's not rock and roll. You know, I can't listen to the stuff that he...
Almost speed metal-like?
Speed metal, yeah, with very very amelodic and, you know, screaming.
Yeah. Kids are into it, man.
And what's amazing is that, I'll you know, we'll be driving someplace and he'll play, you know, whatever, 30 songs, which to me... all sound pretty much exactly the same, and he'll go, "Oh, that sucks." Or, "Oh, that's good." "Oh, that sucks." "Oh, that's good." You know, it's interesting because he hears things that I don't hear. But my point was that I took him the other day. He said, you know, he had this gig up in where is it, in Westchester someplace, New Rochelle. And, you know, he said, oh, I got this gig. Will you take me to the gig? And I said, yeah. I took, you know, loaded up the station wagon. You know, I'm the roadie now. And we drive to this neighborhood, and it's a house in the suburbs, and there's nobody home. And I'm like, there's no gig going on here. In the course of like an hour, this kid had taken his basement and transformed it to this like little venue. It put out a barbecue and was like grilling, you know.
Inside the house?
No, out in the front yard. And all these kids just showed up.
Wow.
For this scene. And three bands showed up, one of which had been on the road for like 3 months. They came from St. Louis and had booked this kid's house to play.
That's awesome.
In the afternoon. And, you know, the point of it is that these kids, they just wanted to play. And they found a way to do it. And, you know,
That's a great story.
It was fantastic.
That's encouraging because, you know, I think a lot of people, the arts for a lot in America have always been kind of difficult. You know, you have the work ethic, you know, the so-called Christian work ethic in America, and the arts in Europe. And you know how it is. There are bands that can tour, especially jazz. I have friends in jazz bands. They can't make a living here, but they can tour Europe all summer.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them, interestingly enough, are school teachers, and then this summer off, so they do the festivals in Europe. But, you know, we sometimes forget that the arts, and especially when funding gets cut and stuff, how important it is. You know, my kids go to public school here in the neighborhood, and they slash the art budget. You know, those are the things that get slashed, and you go, they need that, man.
They really do need it.
Yeah.
They really do need it. It's a blessing.
Kevin, I've got one final question. You've been a great interview, and I'm, you know, really happy that we could share your passion for music. If you could play any rocker in a biopic, who would that be and why?
I think I would have liked, although I'm a little bit too old now, I think I would have liked to have played Hank Williams. I did a couple readings of a one-man show, and it sort of, you know, turned me on to, you know, Hank's complex and tragic life and his, you know, immense kind of talent. You know, I didn't, it never came together, and I think I'm too old for it now, but, you know, I think he was in his 20s when he
27,
died.
Yeah,
27.
The magic age for death in rock and roll.
Is 27?
Morrison, Joplin, Hendrix.
Always 27?
Always 27.
Wow.
This must be like some kind of major passing into another.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Hank Williams. Well, you know what? Let's go out with one of your songs. Which song should we play off the new record?
You know what? Play Tuesday, because that's a song that I wrote for a mutual friend of ours who had a little sort of tragedy in his life, and you know, he told me about it, and I
know what we won't give it away. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And then I wrote this song, and you know, I gave it to him, and he said, oh, thanks for taking my personal tragedy and using it for your own petty little artistic gain. And I said, oh, well, sorry, but I like the song, so I'm keeping the song. Actually, he likes the song too, so worked out all right.
Can't believe what I'm hearing. Is this some kind of joke? Are you out of your mind? Have you had too much to smoke? Feel like I'm sick as a dog, and I'm stuck in a storm on a boat. Got something bad in my belly, just right my throat. Yeah. This was supposed to be Tuesday, the 13th of May, 2001. nothing special about it. To set it apart. This was supposed to be Tuesday, not the day you broke my heart. This person before me, I thought I was. Even if I could get off the floor, what would I do? Sitting watching as the sun turns to a scream. Somebody shake me. From this dream.
You've been listening to Kevin Bacon. This is Dusty Wright for The Culture Catch. I want to thank today's sponsors. That would be Final Draft and the people at Apple Computers, the makers of Garage Tunes. Check them out. And stay tuned for the next Culture Catch. Just remember, converge is the word.